Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that was I Know You Got Soul by Bobby Bird, born on this day in 1934. And you're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on WEAA 88.9 FM, celebrating 88 days of summer. Today on the program, we'll bring you some of our favorite segments from the past two decades of The Mark Steiner Show. What you're about to hear is a pre-record, so we can't accept any calls. Please send us any feedback to talk@steinershow.org or tweet me at Mark Steiner. Enjoy.
We are joined by Rayne Alexander, who is Operations and Development Manager of the Maryland Film Festival. She's a musician, lead singer for The Degenerates. Tona Brown joins us. She's a concert violinist and a singer and leader of the Aida String Ensemble. And Rayne and Tona, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
So, and your group is the Degenerates.
The Degenerates,
Like it's like feminine like, ets.
Yeah, or, you know, lightweight degenerates, maybe.
Well, we'll see about that.
Exactly. Right.
So, this we're having a conversation with two of you on this issue. Part of it is because you are both transgender women. And I think that, as I said before we started the air, we've done many conversations about this, but it's something I think many people have a difficult time in the larger world, the outside world, putting their hands around and understanding, you know, conceptually. And so I wonder if you would just, Tona and Rayne, just kind of just individually for a moment, just tell your stories of growing up and your own discovery of self.
Sure.
Just to give people a sense of who you are.
Sure.
You want to start, Rayne, and then we'll go to Tona?
So. Okay. That sounds good. So I was born into a fairly religious Mormon family and knew pretty early on that I had some gender issues going on, which I kind of kept to myself. And I don't think terribly successfully. I think it was pretty obvious to a lot of people
from childhood, something was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I didn't really begin to explore any transition options until I got to college and, pretty much started researching. And this was in the late 80s when a lot of information was not readily available. I had to go into the, the deep stacks at USC and look at a lot of, very, very deep surgical and sociological sorts of textbooks to get my information. I'm like, well, I guess if that's what I got to do, that's what I got to do. This is before Judith Butler had published Gender Trouble and a lot of other theory and a lot of the other things that have kind of, given rise to the movement throughout the 90s and the early 2000s. So, yeah, I began my transition kind of officially in the early 90s, just after I finished college, changed my name, started the process. Haven't regretted it ever since.
Tona Brown?
I was born in the South. My family is from Norfolk, Virginia, and the rest of my family is from North Carolina, South Carolina, all the way through Louisiana. So you can imagine growing up in the Bible Belt. So some of my family members are ministers. And so growing up was very interesting because, like Rayne mentioned, a transgender individual just lives their life. They don't really think about what I think everyone else thinks about, like, some of the questions that people ask about your growing up are really interesting because, being a feminine, at that time, male identified person, you're just being yourself. You're being your authentic self. But you realize while growing up that something is not working. And I think that's the only way that I can describe it. And like Rayne, it wasn't until college that I even realized that there was that option because there were no trans people around me. In fact, it wasn't until later in life that I even knew what that term meant or that it was even possible. So I was considered very androgynous, which means it was really hard for people to decipher whether I was male or female at that time. And that was very comfortable for me, actually, until college, where it was just like, okay, something is different. You're not just doing this for a show. You're not just projecting something that you see on television. This is who you are, and you're going to have to sit down and do some research and figure out where you're going to go. And that's what I did. Like Rayne, I in college, I started doing some research and talking to people and, learning about the process. And that's how I came to be who I am now.
if you can, I know it's not easy to do sometimes, but in the process of growing up, what it was like for you knowing that you were different than most other people around you, their response to you, and what people feel like inside. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I think that's the people. And I think when you had these conversations between transgender people, gay and lesbian, and heterosexual people, whatever those things really mean.
Right.
We can get into before we end. But people describe things very differently about what goes on, both emotionally and psychologically, and also how people respond to you.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Tona.
Well, I know for me, it was everyone around me noticing that I was different. And I don't know if Rain feels that way, but, you know, when you're a young person, you know, you're just being yourself. And so when you see that the whole world around you sees you as different, that can have some psychological ramifications. One of the things that's interesting for me is looking through poetry when I was younger. It was very mature and it was dark. It talked about abandonment, about all sorts of, almost as if that I was going through a depression but didn't even know I was. And what I think that was just trying to, that struggle, feeling different, knowing that you really couldn't place why things were different. And when I looked in the mirror, you know, something wasn't complete. So that is like my general take when people ask me that question. It's like, it's a subtle thing that grows and grows and grows, and it gets to a point where you have to make some sort of decision or accept who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, growing up, I think it was very obvious to a lot of people, and there, I think there was a lot of unspoken desire, both from my immediate family as well as their church community, to not only not acknowledge it, but to try to force it away, force away the, you know, the gender issues that I clearly seemed to be having. And, you know, again, like I'm sure that in their unspoken acknowledgement of it, they just thought that I was growing up gay, which was, you know, a sin and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, and it made me realize like it was going to be very difficult for me to kind of skip past that particular step and say, like, actually, I don't think it's just about sexual orientation. I think this is about another thing altogether. So we didn't really have a place of dialogue. And, you know, what I think is kind of interesting to me now, you know, years and years later, post-transition, and now that I've spent a lot of time looking at critical theory and things like that, you know, I get asked this kind of question all the time, like, so how did you feel? How did you know all this other stuff about, you know, who you thought you were going to be or who you really were? And I'm really interested for the populace, just the populace in general. Like, how does anybody know that they're a particular gender?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Right.
I mean, how do you know? Is it because you're told? Is it because you feel a particular way? And for somebody who has never had that conflict, they never have to address that question.
But let's explore what you're just saying for a minute. Because I think that this is part of what people, I think, in who are not transgender, who are not two-spirit people, that don't can't get to, which is you were born in a particular body, a woman's body, a female body, or a male body.
Right.
But what you're saying now, Rain, and what you were saying, Tony, I mean, this is not – you said this is not what defines your gender. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
That's exactly what we're saying.
So what does that mean?
No, that's a great question or statement or what have you. That's exactly what we're saying. In fact, I will go even further to say that there are a lot of people that struggle with different things, especially when it comes to gender identity, sexual orientation. What you have to understand is that what is below does not dictate who you are, which you would think, you know, you would think is an obvious,
right,
but
yeah,
it really isn't the average person. You know, the average person believes, well, this is how it is, and, you know, this is the way an individual was born, so they are going to like football and or whatever, you know, some stereotypical, you know, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what research is showing, what we have learned, and the blessing of being a transgender individual, no matter where you are in the process or what have you, is that you can see things on two perspectives. And I think that you know, I wouldn't change having gone through this transition to find who I am for anything, because I feel that every person in their life, even if it's not a gender issue, has a period of growth and development. And if people would not concentrate so much on, you know, what's below and, you know, and all that good stuff, they would see it as that. It's just a, it's a period of growth and development and finding who you are.
You want to ask them about that, Rain?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that, that struck me as Tona was speaking is that, you know, even within what we might consider in a Western culture gender normative behavior, there is a pretty wide range, both for male people and for female people, of what is acceptable. So you can have like a very, you know, aggressive, muscular jock kind of guy and a very slim, nebbishy, nerdy kind of guy. And there's still there's no conflict there.
And you can find one and the same sometimes.
Exactly, exactly. By the same token, you can see, you know, a very high femme, very delicate kind of woman, and have a very active, you know, mountain climber kind of woman. And, you know, we don't have those conflicts necessarily when we see them in supermarket or, you know, wherever.
Right,
you know,
right,
we don't have those conflicts. That that moment that I think we can all relate to, where we're encountering somebody and suddenly we don't know what gender they are. You know, we don't necessarily have that shock with a whole range of people. What this brings to mind is that moment that I had when I decided that, yes, I was going to transition and I was going to really, you know.
Physically from a man to a woman, you're talking about.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Is that,
I mean, it's not terminology that really,
What would be the terminology that you would be more comfortable with?
To go from a boyish thing to a girlish thing, you know? I mean, and I know that I'm using the word thing there, which is also very loaded, and I don't really,
right.
You know, that'll definitely get me in trouble. But, you know, forgive me. but, you know, it's you know, I never, ever would have imagined that I could have been passing as a man at any point. And when anybody wants to talk to me about this, you know, and they're like, oh, so you used to be a man. And I'm like, well, actually, I've been a lot of things, but that's one thing I've never, ever, you know, achieved. Nobody's ever even been able to really accuse me of that.
Of being a man.
Oh, yeah.
But both of you were physically men.
Male, yeah.
Male
right? Organs and things. Yeah.
Physicality.
You know, what you see is what you get. So if you want to say this is a man, then no, I guess that's your okay. Problem.
No, I don't look at you now. I wouldn't say that. But
yeah.
When someone is transgender, I think that in Western culture and society, it confuses the world because it goes against understandings of the sexual norm. So I'm saying so, and so it begins to raise questions about gender and sexuality on a much broader spectrum.
Mm-hmm. It definitely creates discomfort.
Well, I think if you would,
go ahead, please.
I think that what it really does is, I think that it causes you, the person who sees a transgender individual, to question yourself, because at that point, that individual that sees a transgender individual, especially if you're attracted to that person in any way, it causes you to look inward. And that's the feeling that people don't necessarily like, because we don't care. Most, if you see anyone walking down the street, you don't really know what their gender identity is or who they are, really. You mm-hmm. really don't. You just see what's on the surface. But when someone like Rain or myself expresses to you, okay, this is who I am, which is one of the things that I'm really big about, which it dispels so many stereotypes. It makes men feel uncomfortable because this is someone who is pretty. This is someone who is soft, feminine, beautiful, all of those adjectives. And to have that adjective for someone who was born male makes them feel uncomfortable. And it really makes them feel uncomfortable if they're attracted to you, if they are heterosexual, of course, if they're attracted to you. And so it causes you to look inward. And again, that's not the trans person's issue. That's their issue. Do you see what I'm saying?
No, I understand exactly what you're saying, yeah.
And I think that's really imperative to bring up. That person is being their authentic self. In my memoir that I'm writing, This Is Who I Am, you know, I speak about things like that. Growing up, I was a double dutch champion. I did everything that I thought was fun. I wasn't doing it to make a statement. I wasn't doing any of that stuff to prove to the world something different. You're just being yourself.
And for both of you, growing up in a Southern religious culture in the black community, growing up as a Mormon,
mm-hmm.
That had to be very tough. I mean, because those communities, especially those kind of deeply religious communities, because especially the monotheistic faiths of our world as they grew, this is an anathema. This is something that is created because it's hard to deal with, mm-hmm. as opposed to, let's say, if you go to some other communities in Southeast Asia that I've visited, or Lakota, or some Navajo in the Navajo and Lakota, that they are in some Buddhist culture in Southeast Asia, it's just called the third way,
mm-hmm.
the third sex, third way. And it two spirits among, in different, said differently in different languages, but the concept mm-hmm. is essentially two spirits, and accepted and understood, oh, this is who this person is.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that so, but you didn't grow up in those two places.
No,
so.
No,
exactly. I mean, of course, it was. There were some very difficult times, but I was very fortunate to have a mother who was very protective over me, and she would not allow anyone to disrespect her child. That was just her thing. My child is different. And I love my child, and you will not disrespect or cause any drama. Now, I was very fortunate in that, and you can imagine that there's a lot of people that did not have that sort of protection.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being in the African-American community, there is a lot of homophobia within just general culture. And we're starting to see that's slowly changing, praise Jesus, you know? You know, we're starting to see that is changing a lot. But then to take it further and to say that, no, you don't identify this way of the stereotype that they gave you, but you're changing your gender, that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah,
that's a whole different conversation.
And
so,
not only that, to be able to be passing as that other gender that you transitioned to, whether it was male to female, female to male, giving up a certain privilege to be a feminine person, you know, because a lot of men, especially in African-American community or any minorities, you know, where there's machismo and there's, you know, there's a very, what is the word? The culture is just very, what is the word? I can't think of it.
Masculinist?
But where the men are just very, very masculine. There's just a culture of being, I think you guys know what I'm trying to say.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we're being macho is a good way to describe it in a very simplistic terms. I mean, mm-hmm. when it's a culture where being because of all the kind of mentality that people were beaten down with, the idea of being men having sexual prowess as men with women, of being physically tough, of being mm-hmm. strong, that's what you're talking about.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for clarifying that. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
You're listening to an archive of The Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA 88.9 FM, celebrating the 88 days of summer. And we'll be right back in just a minute. On our way to break, we hear Sea Jam Blues, the great Oscar Peterson, born on this day, 1925. Thank you.
of bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bell time and jingle bell time. Dancing and prancing in Jingle Bell Square. In the frosty air. Gliding in the one-horse sleigh. Giddy up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. Jingle around the clock. Mix and a mingle in the jingling feet. That's the Jingle Bell Rock.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And that was Jingle Bell Rock, Bobby Helms, born on this day in 1933.
And you're listening to The Mark Steiner Show. This is just a reminder that we're listening to an archive of The Mark Steiner Show this hour and cannot accept any calls. But please send your thoughts to talk@steinershow.org or tweet me at Mark Steiner. Now back to our segment.
We are joined by Rain Alexander, who is Operations and Development Manager of the Maryland Film Festival. Tona Brown joins us. She's a concert violinist and a singer. And leader of the Aida String Ensemble. We're having a conversation with two of you on this issue. Part of it is because you are both transgender women.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the broader discussion that and just in a social thing, before we get to the political questions that we face here now, I want to talk a bit about that before we have to end, is that to really wrestle with the idea of two spirits,
mm-hmm.
which the way I describe it is that way often because it just sounds to me more like a gentle, inclusive term, that the notion of being a two-spirited human being,
mm-hmm.
that it does address for people their fear of talking about what I call, for want of a better term, the pansexuality of humankind.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree.
Because
we have
this definition,
sure,
that, you know, fits. First of all, it didn't fit for gays, and then it didn't fit for lesbians, and then all of a sudden there's this bisexual thing,
It's funny because, you know, this is bringing to light a lot of the kind of the morphing terminology, you know,
right.
That especially if you look at the history of the, you know, the gay liberation movement, you know, it becomes this really interesting linguistic. I don't want to call it a war, but it does feel like that many times.
Language,
you know?
Is a war.
Yeah. So, you know, you get to see this like gradually expanding alphabet of acronyms that come out of the GLBT, et cetera, movement. You know, we've definitely begun to see that within the trans world as well. You know, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, up until like the early 90s, we didn't really even see much acknowledgement, even within the gay communities, of trans people. And as more of us became connected with the internet and, you know, theorists were publishing books and looking at gender identity as a very palpable social phenomenon, something they could really build careers upon, you know, we got to see a lot more of this dialogue coming up. And we've gotten to a point now where the word transgender is serving as kind of a catch-all. And,
catch-all,
you know,
for what?
For anybody who kind of falls within a non-gender,
yes,
normative identity,
term.
You know, so we get to see people who are transsexuals who are often medicalized and, you know, who are going through surgeries and hormones
from one
and stuff
gender
like that.
To the,
yeah,
other physically.
And then, you know, other people who are maybe just dressing the part, you know, who otherwise might be called transvestitic or, you know, something along those lines. Cross-dressers, even drag queens are sometimes lumped under this transgender umbrella.
And should not be?
Well, I don't really care. I don't, you know, I'm kind of an anarchist when it comes to these kinds of things. And I'll take whatever term you want to throw at me, because usually I can find some way of spinning it around to like make it work.
Uh-huh.
But for me, you know, it's also hard. I'm too old to get that caught up in, you know, what I am now and all this other stuff. You know, I use the word tranny a lot, and that's a very hot button word within,
uh-huh,
the community. But I'm personally okay with it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've said recently is that the word transgender to me is, even though I accept it and I use it, it strikes me for my own experience a little bit disingenuous. For the same reason I wouldn't use the word two-spirit, because that doesn't feel like it speaks to me. For me, transgender, even though it brings something to light, ultimately, the one thing that I think has remained pretty much stable with me is my gender identity. It's just that my body has changed.
I agree.
And, you know, so, I mean, I'll take the label until a better one comes along because another one's coming.
Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I think it's another example of a way that we in this culture and society have to put a label on everyone. What you see in front of you when you're around a person of trans experience, as I like to say, is that authentic person. And they are a person. If they identify as male or female, that's who they identify, and that's what should be respected. What I feel is harmful oftentimes in labeling people, no matter where they are on the spectrum, is that it's yet again another example of someone saying, well, you're not really a woman. You're not really a man. You're not really anything. So we're going to put you in this box instead of just seeing me or Rain as women or what have you. Or some gentleman as a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that over time, that kind of stuff is going to fade away. I think that over time, people will get to see the authentic person, realize that the authentic person, however they identify, is who I see in front of me and what I'm going to accept.
Yeah.
And also, as we were talking about before, it's a way for certain people. And I speak from dealing with men primarily. You know, it's a way for guys to say, well, at least if this person identified this way, I know. You know, it's just, I think it's really funny. It's kind of hilarious because you really don't know. You don't know if a woman is walking past you or a man is walking past
who
they are.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to just add a little bit to that. You know, and I'm speaking from somebody who is pretty much lesbian identified, but you know what I've noticed in the men that approach me, you know, because I do get hit on, is that I think that even though a lot of times there is this cultural shame which might be laden upon a man who might have an attraction to a trans woman, in those private moments, in those one-to-one moments, the curiosity and the dialogue that can come up, I think, is really, really
between
rich
you and a
really
man,
interesting.
You and a,
yeah,
well, essentially heterosexual man.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And once able to kind of like knock the possibility of a actual like encounter with him off the table and be like, let's just have a dialogue. I found some really, really, really amazing and interesting dialogues. Things that, you know, growing up when I got really radicalized and, you know, wanted to go join a separatist feminist colony somewhere, I never would have thought I'd been having. You know what I mean?
Go ahead, Tony, what were you about to say with that? Yeah, I heard you about...
No, I was just laughing because I could totally see Rain doing that.
So just to – and I don't mean this in a purient sense – but I think the things that you just raised, I can hear people thinking about this as they're either reading or listening to this. You self-identify as a lesbian.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And Tony, you don't. You self-identify as – you do?
No, I do not.
Okay, you do not. No. I just being clear. So there have been a lot of transgender people, a number of transgender people, who have been severely beaten – killed by men who discover that this woman that they find attractive may have male parts as female parts, for whatever, you know, however that works.
Yeah.
So the question is, so I think that there are a lot of people who are hearing this or reading this and saying, so what does a person do as transgender? How do you fall in love? How do you find somebody to be with? Do you know what I'm saying?
Can I answer that?
Yeah, Tona, please.
Okay, well, I think, and this seems like, and a lot of people hear this in my tone, it's just like anyone else. You have the ups and downs, you date, you do just like a normal person, because you know what? We're normal people,
right.
You know?
No, right. I
say that and laugh, but I think, I mean, and I'm not poking fun at your question. I'm so glad you're bringing these questions. there's a process of dating, and when you're dating someone and you disclose, this is who I am, a transgender person, transsexual person, whatever terminology the individual is going to use, that's when you disclose who you are, what your experiences have been, and it's up to that person to decide as to whether they would like to pursue a relationship with you. And a lot of times when you hear about these horrible stories, either it is from someone who just could not deal with what their attraction was, or they felt deceived in some sort of way and may have been deceived in some sort of way. It especially depends on where they met the person, the situation. And I definitely am not saying that there should ever be a reason why someone should feel just to end anyone else's life.
Because
oftentimes you will see that there's a trans panic defense when there's no other defense that they can give. And there's been stories of people that I've known who have been dating these gentlemen for an extended period of time. But when something got violent, there was the trans panic defense. And all of us knew that that person knew about this person's gender, and that wasn't the issue. It just got out of hand.
Yeah. I think to add on this, I mean, there's no question that this kind of violence happens, and it continues to happen. And one of the things that occurred to me a few years ago, in another aspect of my life, I create video art, which is largely assembled from, existing sources, hunted footage or found footage. And a piece that I put together a couple of years ago assembled, basically, as Tona's saying, moments of trans panic from the history of Hollywood. You know, for 100 years, we've been seeing this same kind of scene of either embarrassment, joking, derision, and violence. And so I was able to assemble a film that runs about 5.5 minutes that's all these scenes ranging from these early Ernst Lubitsch and Buster Keaton films that range all the way up to today with, you know, scenes from Entourage and, you know, these kinds of things. It's one of those media messages that we're constantly being given. One of the reasons that I wanted to put it together is because I realized that a lot of times we've got these movies that are obsessed with gender nonconformity or trans characters. And the shock value, you think of the movie The Crying Game being one of the biggest examples, where we have like a national secret, like nobody tell the secret because you're going to go see this movie and it's going to have this big secret. Leaving aside that was really actually a very small part of the actual narrative of this, you know, like basically espionage film. Everybody was conspiring to keep this thing a secret. And yet what I got out of that message, or what I got from that film, is shame and embarrassment and never to reveal my own secret. You know, that's the message that I took away from it. And I decided that what I wanted to do is pull together all these scenes of reactions. These people who are, I mean, basically what I was paying attention to when I would see these films, whether it's Stephen Ray vomiting or Jim Carrey parodying Stephen Ray vomiting. And once these things are all assembled together, it really becomes clear that what we have not only done for trans people is to give us the message that we need to keep our mouth shut, but that the way that you're supposed to react when you are in that moment is to make a really bad joke or be like squirmy or awkward or, in worst cases, violence.
And also, we purport it as an artist, for both of us, we know that in our music, the music industry has a tendency to poke fun at the subject, and or the same thing that she's talking about with the images, but through words and lyricism to degrade trans people. And so, again, I don't want to use the term propaganda, but again, if this is something that is constantly being put out there for the whole world to see, you're going to have these sort of reactions. And in shows like this, it's television shows that are more open and affirming. It's the media that is working closely with the trans community to say, okay, let's put a stop to this sort of negativity, stereotyping, and any other word you want to use. Let's put a stop to the sensationalism and get to know the person. And report on the person. I can't tell you how many interviews I do, and the interviewee or interviewer is constantly trying to go back to things that they feel is the most important. Like, for instance, oh, so I see you love to change your hairstyle. What does that have to do with, you know, with the fact that I'm a recording artist and I tour the world performing and I'm an advocate? You know, all those things that make me a human, that make me unique, that make Rain a human being, that makes her unique. You know, that those are the things that I constantly focus on when I talk to anyone about my experience. The normality of, and, you know, things that are quote unquote normal, you know, that I wake up and put on my pants one leg at a time, just like you do, you know?
I think it's
so funny because, you know, the general public is just like, well, yeah, I guess a person would, you know, well, you know, and I now at this point find it comical, but it's imperative that we do this sort of work. And that more women and gentlemen as well feel comfortable enough to speak about their lives and to come out and say that I'm proud to be who I am. That's also the last step, I feel, that's needed to end this violence and all this stereotyping and sensationalism. When you can see that your lawyer, your doctor, your musician, your the clerk at the grocery store, you know, when you went to McDonald's or wherever, to know that we are indeed everywhere and that we're just like you. And when I was in line in front of you and you were talking about, oh, girl, I love that nail color. You know, I didn't disclose to you that I'm a transgender woman, but we had a conversation just as you would with anyone else.
And I think the important parts of what both of you have been saying is, and why I think this is a really important conversation, is the normalcy, understanding the normality of people's lives is what you two have been describing.
Yeah, one person's exoticism is somebody else's mundanity, you know.
Exactly. So when you see things like what occurred around the attack on Christy Lee Polis at the McDonald's, Tiona Brown, 18-year-old girl, 15-year-old girl who was with her who did this. And then Scott Schellenberger, who is the state's attorney for Baltimore County, is prosecuting her, but also as a hate crime.
Right.
We can talk about that separately, about what you feel about how this should be handled, what should be done. But then Governor Martin O'Malley, maybe he wants to be president, but he's not. Governor Martin O'Malley talked about the equal rights for transgender people and protections and like, what's his name, State Senator Madaleno from Montgomery County, Richard Madaleno, who is openly gay and in the legislature, wants to sponsor another transgender protection bill in the next session coming up.
Right.
Talk about how you look at that situation and what it kind of politically and legislatively means about what you two think should happen and your response to these things.
Well, let me say quickly, because I know she's going to get into the political part of it. I want to say socially, what this, I think it's appalling and a shame that there has to be either a death or a severe beating of some sort to get people to move. And it's not just with trans people. I do understand that. That's just the history of how things go. But to see something like that happen, and thank goodness for the videotape, because normally it would have been reported, laughed at, and nothing would have happened.
Right.
But this caused them to make an action. Now, mind you, I sit on the transgender response team, which is through the city of Baltimore, and it's an amazing group. But what we do is do studies on what's happening in Baltimore. And we have been pushing this protection for the past year, that this is what needs to be done. Okay? Now people are seeing why this is so important. After an event this serious, it shouldn't have gotten to that point. It should not have gotten to the point where someone had to be almost killed on camera for you to sit there and think about this and realize that if thousands of people are petitioning saying we need this protection, because it's not just because we're just dreaming of this, it's because we see that this is the problem. We've heard the stories. People are terrified to go into these public places for various reasons. So I just want to say that I just think that the whole situation was horrifying. And the fact that the entire, you know, crew there just sat there and watched and poked fun is another example of this stuff that we were talking about. How are you supposed to react to this? I mean, the gentleman, well, I won't even use that term for him, but the person there actually said, well, oh, it's okay, that's a dude, you know, on the tape. So I am glad in one sense that legislation is going to happen and that things are moving forward, but I just feel that it's such a shame that it had to take something this terrible to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it breaks – the whole thing just breaks my heart on kind of every level. Just no pure good is coming out of the situation, you know, and that's what really makes me most deeply sad about it, you know. You know, we had had this legislation that didn't quite go through, and one of the things that I found very interesting is that it really revealed a lot of fractions within the trans community that otherwise had not been spoken about except in our own message boards and our own little enclaves. And so a lot of these things became more public. And, you know, ultimately I'm not entirely sure where I fall with any kind of legislation, you know.
Really?
You know, I'm not a legal scholar by any stretch. And I know that I also know that no legislation is going to be perfect. I mean, we're still dealing with civil rights legislation nuances that, you know, when it comes to other categories are still being figured out, you know, ultimately, you know, whether it's race or ethnicity or, you know, these other things. There's legislations around civil rights that are never, ever, ever going to be perfect. And I think one of the things that is most interesting around the bill that didn't get passed this last session that will – you know, maybe get past next session is that we'll still see a lot more of these arguments. So, you know, I think we'll see that you know, these debates are going to come up a lot more. But what I think is most interesting is that something I'd never thought I'd see in my lifetime, where legislators are having to deal with these issues and start thinking about these issues as if they're real, because they are real. You know, it's just there was a point in my life where I figured that just saying the word transsexual would shatter everything. And, you know, and like and I would never, ever be happy, and I would never like live to be in love and in a relationship and be able to go out and be myself, you know. And for me to in my lifetime, relatively short lifetime, to be able to be here and find that not only the city of Baltimore, but the entire state of Maryland is grappling with these issues. It's mind-blowing.
Do you think we need to have a bill passed that specifically protects transgender people?
Well, I think that I don't know what language it's going to be required to do that, but you know, it can't hurt. It can't hurt, you know? I mean, I think like Tona was saying, it's a shame that it's kind of taken this kind of turn to make people want to actually make it happen. You know, I don't think that we should need any of the legislation about non-discrimination. I think it just should just be common sense and common courtesy. Yet, you know, these legislations seem to need to be passed. So in that regard, yeah. But, you know, it just breaks my heart that that's the nature of the necessity there.
So one of the things that Rain said in the – that you said in saying that it's a shame we need this legislation, but we do need something to protect people. And one of the things you said there, you never thought you'd come to a day where you'd see this come to fruition politically, or and that you see the day where you could actually have a life where you could be with somebody and be happy.
Yeah.
So have both you reached that point?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Good. And that's good. I just checked it.
Things are good.
That's a good thing.
Things are really good.
That's a good thing.
It is wonderful. Yeah, in that sense. It really is.
Well, this has been a great conversation, and I appreciate the both of you taking your time.
Well, thanks for having us.
Some people might want to have more of a political conversation. I wanted to have more of a human conversation.
Sure.
That was okay.
Absolutely.
Sure.
We were sitting with Rain Alexander, who's Operations and Development Manager for the Maryland Film Festival. She's a musician and an artist and a lead singer for the Degenerettes. Tona Brown is a concert violinist and a singer and the founder, right, and leader of the Aida String
Ensemble.
Aida String
Ensemble. A-I-D-A, Aida.
String Ensemble, Aida String Ensemble. So thank you both so much. It's been great.
No, thank you.
No, thank you. The honor.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. To hear the show again, podcast past shows, and find out information about our guests and the work they do, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And you can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes. On our way out of here today, we're hearing Joanna Little, originally by Sweet Honey and the Rock, performed by Adam Rowland. On this day, 1975, Joanne Little was acquitted of murder charges in the killing of her white jailer. The defense said she stabbed the jailer with an ice pick after he made sexual advances. So we leave you, Joanna Little. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.
You're going to be judged by the company you keep. Yeah, always walk by that road to good. Steer clear of controversy to stay real cool. Tell a lie. Came this woman, don't you know, 5 feet tall, charged in deep with breaking the law. And the next thing I heard as it came on the news, first degree murder, she was on the loose. Tell me, who is this girl? What is she to you, Joe? What did she do to deserve this name? Killed a man who thought that she was fair game. Yeah, when I heard the news, I screamed inside. Lost all my cool, my anger I could not hide. Cause now Joanne is you and Joanne is me. And this prison is that a society. Cause we live in a land that brings a pressure to bear on the head of a woman whose position we hear.